From Swarthmore College.
From Swarthmore College,
this is...
This is...
This is...
This is War News Radio.
What is the state of democracy in Iran? Although the 2016 U.S. presidential elections are occupying media and pundit analysis, equally significant electoral changes are occurring around the world. This week, we will be analyzing last month's elections in Iran and what they hold for the future of Iranian relations, both domestic and foreign. We will also revisit the Iran-U.S. prisoner swap that occurred this past January. War News Radio's Ava Shafieh spoke to Shervin Malikzadeh, a visiting professor of political science at Swarthmore College. As an Iranian-American and frequent visitor to Iran, Malikzadeh provides us with commentary on the state of Iranian democracy and attitudes of the Iranian populace.
I had the opportunity to speak to Shervin Malikzadeh, a visiting professor of political science at Swarthmore, before his visit to Iran to vote in the February elections.
The primary motivation is to see if, you know, what is the consequence of this success around the nuclear issue and Rouhani's administration thus far, and, you know, enfeebled or diminished as it may be, that democracy still functions on the same logic of the democracy we have here. You have checks and balances between a parliament and a president, and it helps if that parliament is more in line with the president's thinking, who is a centrist, right? So this politics of inclusion and inclusion that has been rampant in Iran, especially since the late 80s, early 90s with the Guardian Council, keeping people out of elections, like, how will that play out? Now, will there be some sort of political development or breakthrough?
Malikzadeh's questions and hypotheses proved to be integral to our post-election analysis. On Friday, February 26th, in an expected Iranian democratic tradition, Iranian citizens went to the voting booths to voice their opinions. These elections were particularly important. They were the first elections since the historic nuclear deal. Additionally, for the first time, Iranians voted to elect members to two important government bodies. The election results from the 26th of February yielded significant trends. Reformists and moderates won the most seats in parliament, while hardliners lost seats. These hardliners were the same ones who opposed the nuclear deal, while the reformists aligned with moderate principalists, allowing for greater wins in the political center. Before this election, the Iranian parliament was divided mostly between reformists and conservatives. And reformists advocated for expanded political freedoms, while conservatives wanted limitations on power and a greater emphasis on Islamic law. However, now these groups have formed a coalition in parliament. This coalition consolidates the political center, and it's an affirmation of President Rouhani's policies, which depart significantly from former President Ahmadinejad, a notorious hardliner. These new seats show that the Iranian government is moving increasingly towards the center, away from the radicalization experienced under President Ahmadinejad. Even more so, these elections can be seen as a legacy of President Rouhani's 2013 victory.
We live in a post-Ahmadinejad era, obviously, and maybe there's no going back. But there's also this reality that Rouhani invites, to a certain extent, more debate, you know, more openness, and there's a sort of expectation or willingness to risk it. See, Rouhani got elected, and, you know, I only had been to Iran under Ahmadinejad. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, I definitely felt it. You know, the stupidity of saying it doesn't matter who's the president in Iran is belied by that fact that, like, yeah, it does matter, because, like, the atmosphere totally changes overnight almost. But then Jason got arrested that same, like, just a couple days after, like, that same week. Mm-hmm. And so it was just like, what the hell? You know, and I haven't gone back since because of that, to be honest with you.
Shervin Malikzadeh commented on the influence of changing political power. It does matter that Rouhani was elected, even if changes have been modest to minimal. Although modest, shifting political powers in Iran are indicative of a strong democratic culture. Citizens are encouraged to vote, and they turn out in high numbers, higher than many Western countries. However, the supposed opening of Iran cannot be overstated either. Although Iran has resumed diplomatic relationships with the United States and hopes to develop economically, glaring institutional problems still exist. For example, Malikzadeh mentioned Jason Rezaian, a journalist held in Iran, who was freed via a prisoner swap with the U.S. From War News Radio's Sabrina Merrill, we hear about this prisoner swap.
Four dual national detainees were released from prison as part of the prisoner exchange, with Matthew Trevithick, an American, released separate from the exchange. Jason Rezaian, most notably, was the Washington Post's Iran bureau chief, held in prison in Tehran since July 2014, the longest incarceration for a Western journalist following the 1979 revolution.
From the nuclear deal to the prisoner swap, Iran has been increasingly engaging with the West. But a question still remains. Will Iran continue towards a more centrist path, as seen by these 2016 elections? The nuclear deal with the United States was a prominent step towards improving relations, and recent successes with the Iran-US prisoner swap seem to continue this trend.
It's a testimony, certainly, to diplomacy and, you know, communicating. You talk with your enemies more so than you talk with your friends, right?
Yeah.
And in addition to that is the scenario with the sailors, you know, drifting into Iranian waters. And, of course, they were humiliated with the footage that came out, their hands above their heads. But the bottom line is those guys got released within a day, and that would have been not the outcome if we had a different sort of attitude as a country towards Iran.
Malak Zadeh commented on this prisoner swap as a testimony to diplomacy. He also talked about his relationship, both personally and figuratively, to Rezaian.
In many ways, that article, even that section you reference, I'm writing about Jason, but in a sort of sneaky and perhaps underhanded way, I'm writing about myself. In any case, that sort of, you know, shared experience, I think we ended up pulling each other into each other's orbits. And just like easy friendships. And a lot of these guys are journalists, so they have similar professional experiences, I think. And they were very eager, you know, to draw upon their friends or the knowledge we might have had as people involved, not in journalism, but in social research, I guess, social sciencey research. If you write an article about the nuclear issue or the youth in Iran, you're going to be treated differently than if you write about, as Jason did, baseball in Iran, right? The latter is not going to be promoted, the former is, because there's a sort of consensus, spoken or unspoken, that Iran is this scary country and mistreats its citizens, which maybe it is, but it's also a country where baseball occurs.
Malak Zadeh continued to talk about the prisoner swap and how it fits into recent Iranian relations, especially how Iran's continued opening to the West is meaningful, even if it is incremental. However, the main takeaway from our conversation was the time he spent dispelling stereotypes and tropes about Iran.
As you know, like for me, the Green Movement or the protests in Iran are absolutely rooted in a local language, the language of political Islam and the system that's in Iran. So the question becomes why? If this whole thing is a farce, if democracy doesn't really exist in Iran, you've heard me say this before, why do 18 million show up to vote? You know, why is there a turnout rate of over 80% or over 70% consistently at the national level? I just think these are the more important questions. Rather than thinking of Iran in terms of binary or as a paradox, the Persian paradox. Oh, this country that was modernizing now is so religious. People are, I think, unwilling or incapable of even imagining those sort of possibilities in Iran because they're sort of locked into that. Oh, Iran's this way. Women are abused because they have to wear clothing. And we had a long and very entertaining conversation about that in our comparative class, didn't we? The chador and like what women do with their hair. You know, is she resisting or not? There's just like a more interesting ways of thinking about Iran. So hopefully that's because I have some sort of authenticity. And I use that term in quotes by having gone there. Then those sort of unnoticed stories can get fleshed out more, I think, which ultimately creates a foundation for empathy and tolerance and hopefully peaceful resolution.
Leadership is changing, but this transformation in Iran is also incremental. Despite significant democratic changes in Iran, it is still often painted as the foreign other in analysis by the West. Maybe the idea of an Iranian democracy isn't so different from American democracy after all. The Iranian citizens are well aware that there are significant faults in their electoral system and their institutions. However, they acknowledge that if they want change, they must participate in this system because institutions are viewed as the key to future reform. Hope can be found in an energized electorate, voting to make change from within the system. As Malak Zadeh wrote in a recent article for the Washington Post, he stated that, "These latest elections remind us that politics continues to exist in Iran, despite the odds, on a trajectory that may yet prove propitious for democracy." For War News Radio, I'm Ava Shafi'i.
That's our show for this week. War News Radio is a production of Swarthmore College. Visit us online to listen to archived shows, learn more about the program, or subscribe to our podcast. That's warnewsradio.org. You can follow us on Facebook or Twitter to keep up in between shows and let us know what you think. Our behind-the-scenes crew includes Sabrina Merrill and Catherine Pemberton. This show was produced by Lisa Cato. I'm Erica Shrestha. Until next time, thanks for listening.